Today's show is sponsored by Datadog. Datadog is the monitoring, security, and analytics platform for developers, IT operations teams, security engineers, and business users in the cloud age. Their SaaS platform integrates and automates infrastructure monitoring, APM, and log management to provide unified, real-time observability of their customers' entire technology stack. Datadog is used by organizations of all sizes and across a wide range of industries to enable digital transformation and cloud migration, drive collaboration among teams, accelerate time to market, reduce MTTR, and track key business metrics. Give Datadog a try with a free 14-day trial. Listeners will also receive a free Datadog t-shirt. Visit datadog.com/cloudcast. That's datadog.com/cloudcast.
Cloudcast Media presents from the massive studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. This is The Cloudcast with Aaron Delp and Brian Gracely, bringing you the best of cloud computing from around the world.
Good morning, good evening, wherever you are, and welcome back to The Cloudcast. We are coming to you live from the massive Cloudcast studios here in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hope everybody is doing well, and we continue to move into October. It's amazing. We are in Q4. The leaves are starting to change, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, at least here in the States, and things are starting to just barely start to get a little bit cooler, so that's sort of nice. We're going to dive into Cloud News of the Week. It's going to be a little bit of a security-heavy one, because in the interview section, we're going to talk a lot about sort of security from an operations perspective. And the reason we do that is because it feels like we almost have to have a weekly segment on Cloud News of the Week about who got hacked. And I don't mean that lightly. It is an incredibly difficult job, as we've talked about, I think, last week, and we're going to talk about this week. The hackers have it much easier than the protectors. But we're going to dive into that a little bit. Kind of in the who got hacked, a couple of things that impacted by two-factor authentication, multi-factor authentication. Both Coinbase, who obviously is in the crypto space, had a number of their users were hacked and potentially had some of their coins stolen. They took advantage of a multi-factor authentication flaw. And also a company you probably never heard of called Syniverse, who does a lot of the routing of SMS traffic or text messaging, if some of you have heard of that as well. They also got hacked, again, a two-factor MFA sort of thing. So, definitely pay attention to this stuff. Even if you're not in the security space, do your bit to help out and make sure you're keeping your system safe. In non-security related things, a couple of interesting things happened out on the big internet this week. A couple of things that got a lot of noise. If you listened to the Sunday Perspective show this past week, you heard me talk about kind of innovator's dilemma and some of the things that are going on that are trying to impact AWS and somewhat of the broader cloud market. The announcement for that was from Cloudflare. They announced something called R2, which was their object storage offering, which is intended to be both S3 compatible, but also to help avoid egress costs. One of the biggest costs that people often have from working with cloud providers, or AWS in particular, is your egress traffic. So getting traffic into the cloud free, getting traffic out of the cloud, or in some cases even moving it between instances in different regions of the cloud can cost money. This is really Cloudflare. I keep having a hard time saying that today. Trying to attempt to, reduce some of the bandwidth costs and trying to make, this really distributed traffic that's going on in the world. Obviously, they see a lot of that from a CDN perspective, much more manageable for customers. So I get into that somewhat in the last show, Sunday Perspective, if you didn't have a chance to listen to that. But much more details in the Cloud News of the Week, the link to the post and so forth, and people are starting to play around with it. It's still in very early kind of restricted beta, but starting to just see a little bit of early feedback on that. So that'll be really interesting to watch. Another thing that will be interesting to folks is if you are in the open source space, especially if you are developing open source projects, Azure announced a program to give credits for anybody who is building open source projects. So as long as you are building or testing or working on an open source project that is OSI approved and has the proper licensing to be open source, they are giving away free Azure credits for up to a year. So details, again, in the Cloud News of the Week in the show notes. You may want to dig into that a little bit. And then finally, if you pay attention to the internet, or where your parents or your friends pay attention to the internet, you may have noticed that yesterday a lot of stuff was down, including Facebook and a lot of the major Facebook properties, WhatsApp and Instagram in particular. And you know, the postmortem is still being done, but the early candidate looking at it is a BGP failure or a BGP misconfiguration. Lots of stories sort of floating around the internet, but a really nice article by Cloudflare, which I just pronounced correctly, good for me, talks about kind of how some of this might have happened, how they detected the Facebook failure. In essence, Facebook fell off the internet. And it's a really interesting story for those of you who are kind of interested in operations, how routing on the internet works, BGP, some of the more complex types of things in order that makes everything simple for you, the user, just to type stuff in your browser or interact with the internet. Some of those things fell apart, and not necessarily the systems fell apart, but the things tied to Facebook in particular fell apart. So kind of a good write-up in that blog, and that's in the show notes as well under Cloud News of the Week. So I'm going to wrap it up. We're going to have a fun talk with our friends from Datadog, kind of diving into security from a day-to-day operations perspective, a building code and getting into production, and how to monitor that at scale, all from a security perspective, coming up right after the break. Today's show is sponsored by CloudZero. For software-driven companies focused on growing margins, CloudZero is the only cloud cost intelligence platform that puts engineering in control by connecting technical decisions to business results. By analyzing cloud services like AWS and Snowflake, CloudZero provides real-time cost insights that help you maximize margins. Engineering teams can answer critical questions like, who are my most expensive customers? How much does this specific feature cost our business? What's the cost impact of re-architecting this application? With cost anomaly alerts via Slack, product-specific data views, and granular engineering context that makes it easy to investigate any cost, CloudZero is your complete cloud cost intelligence platform, connecting the dots between high-level trends and individual line items. Join companies like Drift, Rapid7, and SeatGeek by visiting cloudzero.com/cloudcast to get started today. That's cloudzero.com/cloudcast. And we're back. Aaron, it's good to have you back. It's good to have both of us back on the show. We've been kind of bouncing back and forth between who's driving shows and who's doing intros. So good to have you back, man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been always interesting. You know, we kind of go through the summer vacations, and then we kind of, you know, go through everything else, and then we kind of hit a groove again here back in the fall. So it's good to settle back into everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, today's going to be sort of interesting for a couple of reasons. Obviously, anytime we have our friends from Datadog on, we love that. They've not only been awesome sponsors forever, but they've always got really good insight. You know, and today we're going to talk a little about security. Like we always tend to talk with the Datadog folks about kind of this great insight they give us. Sometimes it's containers, sometimes it's observability. Today we're going to dive into security. And I think one of the things that we've learned over the years is that security becomes this sort of all-encompassing thing, right? It's not just, you know, a tool like a firewall. It's not just, you know, a team. You really have to sort of make it part of what you do every day. And we're going to kind of dig into, you know, how you incorporate kind of the broader way of thinking about security, you know, using kind of all the tools at your disposal to make security something that you have a better chance at fighting the bad guys. So really excited to have Huxley Barbee, who is head of security product marketing at Datadog. And Huxley, welcome to the show. Great to have you on.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Aaron.
Let's before we dive into security, I know we're gonna kind of get into it. That's your space. Give us a little bit of your background. You know, we've had a chance to talk to a lot of the really smart folks at Datadog for a long time. But give us some of your background and then the things you focus on over at Datadog.
Sure. So I've been in the cybersecurity industry for about 15 years, and I started out in the secured messaging space. But then later at Cisco, I led a consulting practice delivering security orchestration and automation solutions to our customers. More recently, though, I lead product marketing for all the security products here at Datadog. My attention is focused on the Datadog Cloud Security Platform, which is the foundation for all of our security offerings, providing real-time threat detection and continuous configuration checks across applications, hosting containers, and the infrastructure. And because we're built on top of Datadog's observability platform, we also provide unprecedented collaboration between DevOps and security.
Nice. So Huxley, let me ask you this. I'm just going to jump in here. For the security section, you know, and we put some links in the show notes. There's a lot of reports out there floating around, but a lot of times what we see is configuration mistakes, you know, tend to lead to probably the most security breaches, right? And I just saw something the other day on Twitter, you know, about like, it was kind of an offhanded comment about AWS. And it was like, identity management and security is like the number one issue and probably considered the most important and complex product these days. And so like, give us a little bit of background, because some of our audience does come from kind of the infrastructure and firewall days, if you will, right? Like, how does this happen? What does the landscape look like now? And then let's go into a little bit of the mistakes that are made as well.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. You know, if I recall correctly, at the most recent RSA conference, there were a number of sessions that quoted statistics that more than half of cloud breaches are a result of misconfigurations. And also the most recent Verizon data breach incident report corroborates this as well. It mentions that data stores like, you know, relational databases or file storage being placed onto the internet with no controls are frequent. And it's actually more common in the cloud than on premise. And based on what we're seeing internally, it does not surprise us if these numbers are accurate. And part of this is because with the current offensive security tooling, it's possible to scan the entire internet for known exploits in a very short amount of time, making the exploitation of these misconfigurations a complete certainty. So the statistics are not a surprise at all. What is surprising, though, is how preventable these misconfigurations are. Organizations are basically not just, you know, unlocking their door, but throwing them wide open for attackers. And part of that problem is that the people who are provisioning these resources are developers or operations engineers who are not aware of the dangers of what they're doing, or they're doing so without any sort of security oversight. And this is one of the ramifications of the DevOps and security divide, where one side is motivated by performance and fast time to value, whereas the other side is motivated by regulation and assurance and mitigating risk.
Yeah, I talked about this a little bit on a show maybe a month or so ago, you know, just kind of this confusion, this general confusion that I have, which is, you know, as an industry, on one hand, you know, we're constantly seeing these attacks, we see breaches, you know, companies are losing people's identities and credit cards and literally leaving S3 buckets open. And I feel like we really haven't, you know, to your point, kind of come to any sort of gotten any closer between the motivation of app dev teams, you know, folks who are motivated by drive new features, put new things out there, make frequent changes, and the folks who, you know, whether they're part of a security team or an infrastructure team whose job is to be stable and boring and, you know, not make mistakes. Like, how do you sort of see these two worlds kind of reconciling? I mean, is there some middle ground between them? Are there things you're seeing successfully in the market from companies who, you know, whether they call their teams DevSecOps or they're motivating SREs differently? Like, how do we bridge this gap? Because it feels like, you know, unless the motivations are better aligned, we're going to constantly have these problems.
Yeah, you're actually hitting on some really, really good points here. And this is a very hairy question, one that we at Datadog are trying to solve and are solving for many customers. I will start by talking about things from the security perspective, just to sort of level set. So we live in a world where unemployment rate for security professionals is negative, right? And this might be of interest to some of your younger listeners, so I'll repeat that. The unemployment rate for security professionals is negative. There are more jobs out there than qualified professionals. And this scarcity is against a backdrop of asymmetry, and that asymmetry takes two different forms. Okay. The first form of asymmetry is the offense-defense asymmetry. So launching attacks is relatively cheap compared to defending against those attacks, relatively expensive. A teenager, let's say, with a laptop, maybe, you know, $3,000 laptop or what have you, can download some scanning tools from GitHub and start launching an attack across the world, right? Meanwhile, companies have to allocate large budgets to mount even a reasonable defense, right? So that's the first asymmetry that security deals with.
The second, and Huxley, and let me add to that too, there's just the resources required, but there's also the you have to pretty much be perfect in the defense. And in the offense, you're just firing and firing and firing, right?
Oh, absolutely true. An attacker just needs to be right once, right? Whereas a defender has to be right all the time. So yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, it's a very hard job to be on a blue team, to be on the defensive team.
Are you seeing, do you see, you know, examples of companies who are like, hey, like we get the math, the calculus, and these are some of even the baby steps they're taking. Like what, how do we encourage folks? And when they look at that math and they go, boy, it seems like you're fighting an uphill battle every single day. How do we, you know, make the hill a little less steep?
Yeah. You know, to my mind, my personal opinion here is that cybersecurity is part of any organization's larger risk management program. Right. And as with any sort of risk management program, you're looking at frequency and severity on two different dimensions. And then based on which quadrant you fall in, either you transfer the risk or you accept the risk or you mitigate the risk or you ignore the risk, right? And in terms of cybersecurity, there are some cases where you can transfer risk, right? You can buy insurance in some cases. If it's something that is you can accept, then you do so. Although a lot of folks spend time focusing on mitigation, right? Which is important, right? If you're not mitigating at all, there's a whole quadrant of risk management that you're not really doing anything about. Yeah.
And Huxley, let me kind of as a follow up and bring it back to what we were saying earlier about kind of this idea of the SRE and security side of the house versus the developer side of the house. You know, kind of an observation there too is, yeah, you know, one of the early days of cloud, you'd be like, oh, it's not secure enough, or the tools aren't quite there, or the features aren't quite there. The technology is there. And to go back to our original point, the vast majority of intrusions are maybe a misconfiguration or, you know, I'll just say the problem is between the chair and the keyboard and not necessarily a technology problem anymore. And that's not to necessarily point fingers at developers or some of these others, because it could be the tools could be complex. It could be, you know, the folks that are developing code, they just want to go fast and they just want it to work, and security is an afterthought. And so there's this, you know, weird balance that has always been there, but it's just become, in my mind, much bigger. And so, like, what are some of the like strategies or tactics to get this balance between speed and security?
Yeah. And, you know, balance is a very good word here, right? Because this really touches on the second asymmetry that I was mentioning earlier. DevOps outnumbers security. And sometimes that's a ratio of 50-1 or even 100-1, right? And without proper security know-how or oversight, these misconfigurations that create attack surfaces are being spun up all the time. And what's worse is the automation techniques that are being used, like infrastructure as code, are becoming ubiquitous. And so now you have a situation where these misconfigurations or attack surfaces are being replicated at scale, right? And combined with the first asymmetry, we have the situation where security teams are fighting a losing battle, right? And to add more fuel to the fire, in most organizations, DevOps and security, they don't gel well together. And so you don't even have a good starting point for addressing these problems. In fact, not to make too much fun of this, right? At the RSA conference earlier this year, Chris Romeo from Security Journey gave a talk called Developers Dislike Security, 10 Frustrations and Resolutions. And I think last year he did the reverse talk talking about why security doesn't like developers. So there's no love lost between the two in many organizations. But to answer your question on like, how do we find that balance? How do we, you know, reconcile these opposing interests? I think first and foremost, there needs to be a shift in the cultural paradigm, right? There needs to be this involves sort of a mindset change or behavioral change, and it needs to come from the top, right? There must be a belief that if DevOps and security are working well together, it is better for the organization overall. There has to be this belief that you need both to reliably as well as to securely innovate, right? And without that security component, you open yourself up to the possibility of arresting your speed of innovation to a crashing halt when you get breached. And for us at Datadog, this is the value of DevSecOps. In fact, these days, sometimes you hear the phrase, security is everybody's responsibility. Now, when evangelized to DevOps teams, this is a good example of this type of paradigm shift that I'm talking about. But there's more. There's more than that.
Yeah. Can you elaborate a little bit? So one of the things that we've always found interesting is, you know, there are certain kind of fundamental things that you need, certain fundamental capabilities that certain companies have that become the foundation for them being able to move into different markets or to offer different things. Obviously, you know, Datadog for years has been this world-class, massively scalable ability to handle logs, to handle observability, you know, kind of everything that's going on in your environments, they can take a measure of it. You can kind of get insight as to what's going on. How does that, you know, help you guys as, you know, instead of just providing like an APM capability for the app dev team or, you know, performance management for infrastructure, like how does that become a foundational thing for what you do in security? Like, does security benefit from this sort of massive scale? Does it, you know, have different vectors that it has to think about? Like, how do you sort of build upon this thing that other groups already trust a ton for what they do, you know, in a security context?
Yeah. So this kind of goes back to the idea that DevOps outnumbers security by, you know, 50 to 1 or 100 to 1, right? When you are able to bring these two groups together, right, or how you're able to bring them the two together, it is easier to bring security into the operational space than it is to bring operations or DevOps into the security space. Why? Because it's a smaller lift, right? There's just fewer people that you need to bring along if you bring security into the operating environment as opposed to the operating environment into security. And this actually, you know, dovetails into one of the things that Datadog really believes that you need to do in addition to that sort of cultural paradigm shift, which is to leverage shared tooling, right? By providing DevOps and security the same sheet of music, you will avoid fingerprinting and reduce mean time to detect and mean time to respond by allowing the two groups to triage together and to remediate together. In fact, this is very reminiscent of 10 years ago, when there was a big divide between dev and ops, and DevOps was just being defined. We saw this dramatic positive effect that shared tooling had on bringing dev and ops together. And we believe the same is true for DevOps going forward. And by bringing security teams into the operating environment, you can have that shared tooling, but you know, it's going to be much easier for an observability vendor to be able to do that than for a security vendor to try and bring observability into the security environment, simply because DevOps outnumbers security by 50 to 1. And this is, or 100 to 1. And this is a way of doing this without bringing a whole lot of friction between the two groups.
Yep. And Huxley, kind of a curiosity question on my side too. Because we are kind of bringing everyone together and we are kind of really able to now inspect the full stack like maybe we haven't been able to previously, like you were saying earlier, right? Like you've got all these different pieces, you got to put them together in some way, then you got to wrap some tooling around it. Just out of curiosity, you know, where do the misconfigurations or the errors tend to happen? Is it at the platform or infrastructure layer? Is it at the workload and application layer? Honestly, does it matter? Like, should we be thinking about them differently, or should we just be thinking about this as like one big stack these days?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways of looking at that. Certainly there are misconfigurations possible basically every layer of the stack, right? And one other thing that this is touching on is the depth, right? So when we're looking at an attack surface, we're sort of looking, if you can imagine, vertically up and down a stack. But there's a whole other dimension in terms of security attacks that we haven't even discussed yet in this conversation, which is going horizontally, right? And this touches on the idea of defense in depth, right? We often model attacks, security attacks, with a kill chain, right? First, the attacker must infiltrate and then take a number of other steps before reaching the end goal of data exfiltration or data ransom or service outage, right? So if you can imagine the stack is vertical, this kill chain is sort of horizontal, like moving deeper and deeper into the network, deeper into the operating environment. And some of these intermediary steps include lateral movement and privilege escalation. Lateral movement refers to the technique that attackers use to progressively move through the network as they search for assets to compromise. And privilege escalation is the act of exploiting a design flaw or a configuration oversight to gain elevated access to resources that are normally protected, right? Or routing, as it's often known as. And, you know, a focus on infiltration of the kill chain is a very high priority. And there's a lot of industry tooling that's focused on that part of the kill chain, on infiltration. And if defenses at the entry point were perfect, the story would end there, right? That's all we need to do. We just need to worry about the front door, and we don't need to worry about anything else inside the house. But of course, it isn't perfect, right? People do get through the front door. And so you're not going to be able to stop 100% of the attacks at the front door. And so both privilege escalation and lateral movements are key steps that you want to look for. These are also the same key steps that an attacker would use in a multi-step attack. And if attacker finds a way to exploit your web applications, chances are that they will access the underlying system, right? The operating system or what have you, and start doing more complex actions from there. Now, related to this and corroborating this, I should say, is, you know, according to the Verizon Data Breach Incident Report, you know, being dropped from a web application is probably the third most common malware deployment channel after a direct install or phishing via email. And so there's definitely a need for defense in depth, which means a multi-layered defense approach where you have defenses throughout the environment provides that sort of security redundancy. And the thing is, surprisingly, in some ways, it's actually easier to detect post-infiltration activities. A lot of offensive technology and innovation is focused on scanners and phishing support and things of that nature. There's far less, quote-unquote, off-the-shelf security tooling for moving across networks or privilege escalation beyond just like standard operating system utilities. So, you know, just as an example, you can actually get commercial support on Metasploit, which is something that you would use for infiltration. But if you want to leverage a rootkit, you know, all you get is GitHub, right? It's completely open source.
Go ahead.
Oh, anyway, whatever the driver might be, it is beneficial for the defender to leverage detection controls within the perimeter where the attackers might not have as many capabilities for evading detection or obfuscation. And so there's this, you know, tried and true security maxim or adage that, you know, defense in depth, and that still rings true. And you can accomplish this sort of, you know, infiltration plus post-infiltration detection through full stack security, as we've been talking about, right? So the answer is no, is, you know, you shouldn't be thinking about the platform security apart from workload security. Should be really be thinking about everything all together.
Mm-hmm. And kind of a follow on for that, and kind of we'll finish up on this, is in my mind, there's also this idea of, you know, configuration drift that happens pretty much in any kind of environment, right? And so Huxley, is there, you know, especially if I take it even one step further, like, you know, compliant environments like PCI or, you know, some of these others, right? And so, in your mind, how do you think about, I'll just use the term pre-production, right? Like the tooling and the chains and all of that leading up to something going out the door, mm-hmm. and then post-production and how things may drift post-production.
Yeah. So both are important. Both are important. They both have a role to play. One thing I've noticed though, in the industry with the pre-production stuff is, a lot of times it becomes a process that sort of lives on its own, right? One of the challenges in securities is showing value, right? How does a CISO show value to the board for all the budget that's been allocated for security, right? It's very difficult because the definition of good security, or the sign of a successful security program is nothing happens.
Silence. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Right. And right. You know, so right. how do you show value? And this is probably one of the reasons why there's no good security product that doesn't have really good reporting. You absolutely need good reporting just so you have some data to show somebody. But a lot of these compliance programs that are focused on, you know, in pre-production sort of gain a life of their own because it's very easy for a CISO to say, hey, we discovered this many vulnerabilities, we patched this many systems, and therefore we reduce our vulnerability by this much, right? The fact of the matter is some of these vulnerability scans or vulnerability management programs don't really see everything. So what you claim to be, you know, the full holistic comprehensive look of the vulnerability of an organization isn't everything, but it really looks good in reporting that you could, that could go up. And now again, I want to stress that I don't think that pre-production or focus on pre-production is bad. It's just that there are limits and sometimes it isn't being focused on producing better and better reports as opposed to actually reducing the attack surface of the organization. Nevertheless, still very important to do because there are clearly, like, you know, really critical vulnerabilities that you do want to discover and you do want to address. And pre-production type of techniques are very important for that. However, you know, imagine if you had a home and you would walk around the house every 5 minutes to check to see if, you know, there's anybody, if there are any open doors or open windows, right? At some point, it becomes unwieldy or unscalable to be doing that type of thing. Really, what you want is some sort of runtime or post-production check where an alarm, let's say, goes off when somebody enters the window, like to catch things as when they actually happen, as opposed to, you know, continuously checking to see if something might happen one day, even though that exploit might never be exploited. There's one customer that I was talking to about this, and we were discussing pre-production versus post-production, and he was very adamant that, you know, I don't care so much about some open source library that might have been included as a dependency in some service running on a host that might never be executed, right? I don't have time to be worrying about things that may never, ever be exploited. What I really want to know is whether or not something is being exploited right now. And for that, you really need to have post-production security detection controls, and that is entirely post-production. And of course, one of the things that you would be checking on in that post-production environment is configuration drift. And for that, you know, there are many good file integrity monitoring solutions out there. Datadog has one, of course, as well, where we're able to identify whether or not any specific important files have been changed and to surface up an alert when that does happen. It's part of our cloud workload security solution.
It's interesting. It's interesting to sort of hear you talk through it because it feels like there's an element of it, obviously, that is technology, right? I want the ability that you know, when something's identified as being problematic, I can not only make it visible, I can you know, shut the door, I can solve the problem. But it's really interesting to hear how you balance that against the psychology of you know, I don't want to be the boy who cried wolf all the time. Like, hey, it could be a problem. It could be a problem. It could be a problem. People start to, you know, kind of ignore that because if it doesn't become a problem, it's just this constant noise. You know, and just like you said, the overall psychology and security of, like, if you are awesome at your job, nobody hears about it because, you know, it's sort of like being a referee in football. Like, you could do the best job in the world and, you know, you shouldn't impact how much people enjoy watching the game. And so it's an interesting psychology of, you know, what are you trying to showcase to people that you've done versus, you know, kind of calming their fears versus actually just doing the technical block and tackle of, you know, keeping the bad guys out and keeping your data safe and all that sort of stuff. It's really kind of, it's interesting to hear you talk through all the permutations of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is one of the reasons why CISOs tend to have a very short lifespan in each individual organization that they work at. That's entirely part of that, yeah. Sort of calculus.
Yeah. Huxley, I want to thank you so much for digging into these things for us. You know, it's we dabble around security quite a bit. We try and hit lots of different aspects of it, but it's always good to keep digging into different pieces of it, and especially just, you know, like you've talked about, these sort of the math of security that makes it, you know, this constant sort of uphill battle, and how do people work on it. Real quick, if folks want to pick your brain a little bit about some of these things, or kind of want to dig into some of the things that Datadog does with it, what are the best ways to either pick your brain or just kind of engage with the team?
Yeah, so you can reach me at my first name dot last name at datadoghq.com, and you can always look for me on LinkedIn.
Cool, good stuff. Aaron, we learned a little about security today, as always, and you want to take us home?
Yeah, absolutely. So Huxley, again, thank you for your time today. And for everyone listening, thank you again for all the feedback we've been getting, and we really enjoy that. Please leave us a review wherever you kind of get your podcast. Please tell a friend, and as we kind of continue to grow this, as we always like doing, and giving back to the community as well. So for Brian and I, thank you very much for listening this week, and we'll talk to everyone next week.
Thank you for listening to The Cloudcast. Please visit thecloudcast.net to find more shows, show notes, videos, and everything social media.